Welcome to the Hirschfeld Century Podcast. I'm David Leopold, the creative director of the Al Hirschfeld Foundation. And today we are coming to you live from the famous Algonquin Hotel located in Times Square in New York City. And on today's podcast, we are going to do something a little bit different. You're not going to hear Catherine, but you will hear somebody, I dare say, much more interesting on the subject of Noel Coward. Today on our program, we have Alan Pally, who is our guest curator for our new online exhibition, Men About Town, Al Hirschfeld Draws Noel Coward. This is a collection of 23 pieces that really gives you a sense of Noel Coward in New York, particularly on Broadway. And it looks at various productions of Private Lives, Present Laughter, you know, all the big plays, Blithe Spirit, Hay Fever, they're all touched on because all those shows happened while Hirschfeld was drawing. Alan is a particularly good person to talk about this because he has served as a trustee of the Noel Coward Foundation, and he's currently a member of the Foundation's Grants Committee. But I actually knew of and met Alan in one of his previous lives, when he was the head of public programs at the New York Public Library for the Performing Arts. Well, first of all, welcome.
Thank you.
And how many years were you running public programs at the library?
I think about 20. I worked for the library for 42 years since I was a teenager.
Wow. So that's signs of a misspent youth.
Yeah. Yes.
And tell us a little bit about what you did there, because you were a pioneer in some ways. In many ways, actually, in the programming at the library. You produced the first live audio webcast, and that was Comden and Green.
That's right.
And what year was that? Do you remember?
Yes, I do, because it was part of a series celebrating the consolidation of the five boroughs of New York City.
No kidding.
And that was in 1998, and Betty and Adolf kicked off that series.
And then you did the first live video webcast, and that was Hal Prince.
Yes.
And was that around when
that was in the 2000s. That was some years later. I don't remember the exact year.
So you really have brought the library programs from initially just the audience at the library to a much wider audience.
Well, we tried. That's the point, is to make the public across the street and across the world aware of this incredible institution at Lincoln Center, which is the New York Public Library's Performing Arts branch.
My favorite branch of the library.
Thank you.
Love it there. And of course, it's at the entrance of the Performing Arts Library that one can see Al Hirschfeld's barber chair and drawing table and a rotating exhibition of full-size reproductions of his work. Right now, I think Catherine Dunham is on the drawing table, but that's soon going to be changed. So whenever you go into the library, you should always stop and take a look at the Hirschfeld installation to see what's on the drawing board, as it were. But this is, tell us a little bit about what you did for the 100th anniversary of Noel Coward's birth at the library.
In the mid-90s, the Lillian Gish papers were donated to the library at Lincoln Center's Theater Division, which was then called the Theater Collection. And no series of public programs had ever focused and incorporated material from a theater collection archive. And I went through the collection and I saw there were an incredible array of correspondence, personal correspondence, as well as everything to do with Ms. Gish's career.
Right.
And so I thought I would do a series celebrating this new archive, which, and publicizing it, and inviting her friends, because if you have somebody's correspondence, you know who their friends were.
Right.
As well as colleagues whom you could know by looking up her credits. And I think we had about 10 programs, but for the first one, I noticed there were letters to Lillian Gish from Irene Wirth and some other letters from Brooke Astor, who at that point was the library's chairman or chairman emeritus. So I wrote to Irene and I said, would you like to come and open this series celebrating Lillian Gish and her archives? We have Douglas Fairbanks Jr., Gloria Vanderbilt, Teresa Wright, Robert Anderson, Hal Holbrook, Julie Harris, Barney Hughes. And Irene agreed. And I said, for your program, in addition to your own reminiscences, there are letters to Lillian Gish from John Gielgud and Noel Coward. And since you knew both gentlemen, and I knew that she had, because I knew about her career,
sure,
which mostly took place in the UK, in London. Irene was an American actress, but she spent a lot of time in the United Kingdom,
sure,
in London. And I said, in addition, you could read some of these letters from Noel and John and talk about your own reminiscences of Lillian Gish and of Noel Coward and John Gielgud. And she agreed to do that. And in fact, John Gielgud was very kind and wrote a memory of Lillian Gish for Irene to read at that program. Hmm. And of course, John and Noel were friends as well.
Of course.
And so I became acquainted with the letters to Lillian Gish from Noel Coward. He had been in Hearts of the World pushing a wheelbarrow. It was one of her early films.
Sure.
And there's a lovely letter saying, oh, that damn wheelbarrow. A few years later, the library underwent a renovation, and I needed a space to do programs. All the collections and offices were moved out to two places in Manhattan.
Remember it well.
I could have used library buildings elsewhere when their own staffs weren't doing programs, but I saw a job ad for director of programs at Cooper Union's Great Hall, where Abraham Lincoln spoke.
Right.
So I wrote to them and I said, I'm not looking for a job, but I need a space. And if you give me the space and staff, and with staff, I can give you visible profiles.
Right.
I wasn't sure about that, but I said, and they called me in and I chatted with them and they said, okay. And so for 2 years, I presented programs at Cooper Union. But Cooper Union, unlike Bruno Walter Auditorium at the Library at Lincoln Center, which has 203 seats, Cooper Union has over 900 seats. So I needed big stuff,
right,
to produce. And we opened with a masterclass with Barbara Cook.
Oh, yeah.
And we followed with Zoe Cauld. I got all the students for Barbara and focused on the songs she likes. And then we did a big Poulenc series. But the following year, I realized was the centenary of Noel Coward, December 1999. And remembering the letters to Lillian Gish, I thought that would be, because we, you know, part of my mission was to alert people to these treasures in the library. And
of course,
what better way of doing that than enlivening them with actors reading them or talking about them. And so I decided to produce a series celebrating Noel Coward's centennial. And because of the copyright law, you know, even though our series was free to the public and artists and lecturers all donated their time, if you do a scene from a play, you're not exempt from having to get permission from the estate or the agent.
Sure.
And I knew I would want to do some scenes. So I did find out who the agent was in London, a man named Michael Imeson, and I wrote to him. And I said, we'd like to be part of whatever you're doing, and we'll need permission, if you'd be so kind as to grant it, to do scenes from the plays and perhaps readings. And he said, I'm coming to New York. We are doing a big international celebration of the centenary, and I'll come and see you. And he came to see me in my office in the Annex, which was a library building on West 43rd Street. And he said, we're really excited about this. He brought a man named Barry Day, who was helping to coordinate the centennial. And we talked about what I wanted to do. I said, I want to do performance. I want to do songs. I want to do readings of plays that are lesser known, as well as reminiscences of people who knew Noel. And he said, oh, whatever you need. And he came back a few weeks later and brought Sheridan Morley, who wrote the first biography of Noel Coward and was a close friend. Sheridan's father was Robert Morley. His grandmother was Gladys Cooper. Mm. So he was very well connected. He became a good friend. And he agreed to do two programs. Barry Day agreed to do one program. And so we opened in December 1999. I asked Steve Ross and Frank Langella to participate in the opening program. Frank had been in Design for Living and Present Laughter. And
right.
Steve was a master of Noel Coward's songs. And they agreed. And Steve put together a program with about 20, 25 people on it, each of whom would perform and then talk about their connection to Noel Coward. So we had Paula Lawrence, who you know very well. Sure. And then she sang Spinning Song. And Frank had met Noel Coward. Dick Cavett was hilarious singing Why Must the Show Go On? He talked about speaking to Noel on his show. And we had people like Jane White and Jane and Gordon Connell. It was 3 hours long with our chairman emeritus, Mrs. Astor, sitting in the front row of the hard seats at Cooper Union, where Abraham Lincoln had spoken.
Sure.
And so that was the first Noel Coward program. We had several more. We did readings of Volcano and Star Quality, which are lesser known plays, one directed by Roger Rees, the other by John Benjamin Hickey. We had Barry Day put together a program of songs. I got some of the artists from Metropolitan Opera Chorus I had been working with. And we had Jeffrey Johnson, who had been Noel's New York representative and a close friend, who in fact was with him when he died.
Right.
And who later became a trustee of the foundation, on a program with the director, actor John Tillinger, reminiscing about Noel. And it just really went well. We got a lot of publicity. The following year, I did a series on the centenary of the death of Oscar Wilde. And in that series, the estate gave me permission to present the New York premiere of the Noel's adaptation of Oscar Wilde's Lady Windermere's Fan, which is called After the Ball. Mm. And so that's how I got started.
Wow. And so that also brought you to the attention of the Noel Coward Foundation. When did you join the board or become a trustee?
Well, I continued, when we got back to Lincoln Center after that three-year renovation, I continued to do programs with focusing on Noel Coward with the estate's help. We did one called Noel and Alfred and Lynn with Barry Ingham, Simon Jones, and Rosemary Harris. We did a few others. And then when I retired in 2010, the estate asked me to join the board of the foundation as a trustee. And so that was 2010. And I remained a trustee of the foundation, which is a grant-giving organization, which also looks after the legacy of Noel Coward. But at some point, the Charities Commission in London created different structures that became more viable for us. And so the foundation board trustees, many of us transitioned to committees, and I and others transitioned to the grants committee, which I'm still on.
Good place to be in a grant-making organization.
Yeah.
And then this year, you're celebrating what they're calling Coward 125.
That's right.
And that is celebrating the 125th anniversary of his birth. And, you know, in a nutshell, what kind of things will be going on?
Well, it's been a two-year celebration, really. And it's hard to believe it's 25 years since that first Noel Coward program in 1999. The estate in London, which is run by Alan Brody, has been putting together a number of events in New York and London. I would say top of the list is a publication of an incredible book, biography of Noel Coward, which is called Masquerade, The Lives of Noel Coward, written by Oliver Soden, who was given access to personal papers owned by the estate that hadn't been available before. So Oliver's book is a much more personal look, as well as a look at the professional side. And it got rave, it hasn't been published in the US yet, but it's gotten totally rave reviews in the United Kingdom.
Noel wrote several memoirs himself. Isn't that true?
Yes, he wrote three. He wrote Present Indicative and Past Indicative. I don't remember the titles offhand.
Present Indicative, Future Indicative.
Future Indicative.
And the
third. And he had the diaries. He's written diaries. His letters are incredible.
Right.
And of course, Oliver had access to all of that and more.
Sure.
Because there were times that Noel couldn't say what he wanted to say, either in his plays or in his personal writings. Another feature of the of this Noel 125, Coward 125, is a film directed by Barnaby Thompson called Mad About the Boy, the Noel Coward story, which also drew on some rare and unseen materials and focused on the life of Noel Coward in a film about just under 2 hours, which has been shown to great reviews in London and which opens in the US, I'm not sure where, on September 6th of this year. So that is another, and this, the estate and Alan Brody have been basically encouraging and supporting these initiatives, which really bring a wider audience to know. And in addition to that, there'll be a big gala in London on November 17th in support of the foundation and some other actors charities. There'll be performances in New York by Eric Comstock and Barbara Fasano at Birdland. Mm. And the tribute to Barry Day on October 7th, and several other events, including our exhibition.
Right. No, we're so glad to be part of this. Because as you point out in your introduction to the exhibition, there was a lot of mutual respect in the sense of, maybe not, I wouldn't even say mutual respect, but they, in some ways, approached their work, you know, they were witty and elegant, and they sort of transcend any time that they've created the work. Their work has become timeless in that regard because they were both dealing with human nature. And I love how you open up the exhibition by pointing out that Hirschfeld had a photo of Noel in his library, saw it every day, and that there is a Hirschfeld of Noel in the Noel Coward room.
There is a room in London, it used to be in Charterhouse in the city of London. Now it's in Red Lion Square, which is more centrally located.
Right.
In which we have the Noel Coward room, which is run, I believe, by a man named Robert Hazel under the auspices of Alan Brody and the estate of Noel Coward. And it has an exhibition related to Noel's work, and it features a copy of the 1968 Hirschfeld drawing of Noel, prominently displayed on the wall.
Love it.
And I should mention also Ella Radley, who's on the staff there, is coordinating some of the Coward 125 events and works in that office as well.
So wherever you are, really, wherever you're listening to this podcast, there is a good chance that there might be some Noel Coward coming your way. Among the theater subscriptions that I have is the Walnut Street Theater, and they're doing Hay Fever in their next season. And I'm sure that is in part to celebrate Coward 125. So let's start talking about some of that. The first Noel Coward play that Hirschfeld drew was Private Lives in 1931, and it starred Noel Coward and Gertrude Lawrence. But give us a sense of what Noel had been coming to New York for about 10 years before that, maybe longer. Can you tell us anything about his life before he did Private Lives in 1931?
Well, he came to New York in 1921, as Graham Payne wrote, as a penniless playwright. And of course, he was a boy actor, and that's where he met Gertrude Lawrence.
Right.
When she was a girl actress.
Sure.
But he came to New York in 1921, and he loved the city. He met the Lunts at that time when they were all budding artists.
The Lunts are Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontanne, who would become the great acting couple of the first half of the 20th century in New York.
That's right. And world in the English-speaking world.
Right. Yes.
And he loved the city, and although people think of him as the dressing gown and the cigarette holder, he loved Greenwich Village. Mm. And he even wrote that something to the effect that the real essence of New York is not from a penthouse on Park Avenue, but sitting on a bench in Washington Square. Mm. And he wrote about that and his parties, going to parties in the village in his first biography.
Right, right. Well, first of all, we're going to talk about Gertrude Lawrence. I think if people know her at all today, they know her as the star of The King and I, which she was performing in before she died, a show that was written for her. But tell us who Gertrude Lawrence was.
Well, she was, Gertrude Lawrence was an English actress who met Noel when they were kids working as child actors. They became close friends, and he worked with her several times in Private Lives and Tonight at 8:30.
Sure.
She wasn't really a singer, but she had a lovely voice, and he wrote Private Lives for her. He wrote about when he was in the Southeast Asia recovering from the flu or something like that. He had this vision of Gertrude Lawrence on a balcony in the south of France in a white Molyneux dress. And the idea of Private Lives came into his mind. And as he said, previous years, he might have just gotten up and written it right then, but he knew to wait. And so he waited a few years and he wrote this play, which has become a classic in the dramatic repertoire.
Sure.
And he followed that up with Gertrude Lawrence with Tonight at 8:30, which is a series of approximately 11, some people say 10, short plays in which they did The Red Peppers, which Al Hirschfeld drew.
Sure.
And many other things.
He did not draw the original Tonight at 8:30 production, which was three nights of different, of these 10 different sort of one acts over three nights. In part, Noel wanted to do it because he didn't want to be bored. Didn't want to have to do the same thing every night.
Right.
It was a superhuman feat to those shows. I don't know how they did it. In fact, he I think collapsed from exhaustion in New York before the end of the run here. But she just seems like she must have had an incredible charisma, Gertrude Lawrence, mm-hmm. because if she wasn't a great singer, she certainly knew. I mean, people seemed to love her singing. And loved her, you know, went to see her perform. I mean, she was a very popular actress. And to me, it's one of those wonderful things that they sort of found each other and created this, I mean, Noel created this great work to be performed by the two of them. Now, in the show, in the exhibition, you have selected three different productions of Private Lives. We have the original, and maybe you can tell us about some of the supporting players in the original production. You know, in the Hirschfeld drawing, there's Noel and Gertrude Lawrence, Gertie to all of her friends. But there's two other performers in there. I don't know if you remember them.
Yes, the one, well, just to go back, the London cast included Noel and Gertie, Laurence Olivier, and Adrian Allen. Adrian Allen was the wife of Raymond Massey, who was Daniel Massey's mother. Mm-hmm. She was otherwise engaged and couldn't come to New York. So Laurence Olivier's wife, Jill Esmond, came to New York. And if anyone here is a film fan, you might know that Jill Esmond's mother was Eva Moore, who has an incredibly peculiar role in the film The Old Dark House, the James Whale film, in which she says, no beds, they can't have beds. But to get back to the original cast in London, Olivier was a struggling actor, basically.
Right, he wasn't point. Sir Laurence Olivier at that
right.
time.
And he wasn't even that well known. And Noel gave him the part of Victor. And Olivier was amazed at how he'd basically become a star, the throngs at the stage door, the parties. And that persisted in New York. And he was here with his wife, Jill Esmond. And that was exciting for the four of them. Noel had a way of not wanting to play more than 3 months, no matter how successful an event
right.
was. But I don't know how long that production ran, I don't remember. But it was a huge success, and it was well received. And there are countless revivals of it on Broadway and all over the world.
And you include drawings of two revivals, the one that starred in 1983, Richard Burden and Elizabeth Taylor.
Right.
In what seemed like, I think for most audiences, sort of a thinly veiled version of their sort of love story, you know, or their relationship, I guess is what I would say. And then you also included a drawing of Joan Collins, in the, I imagine you saw the, you saw both the Burton and Taylor.
No, actually, oddly, as a native New Yorker, I saw most of the Private Lives productions that I've seen in London.
No kidding.
But I did see, of course, I remember the, because I was working, and I was working so hard at the library, I had didn't have as much time.
Sure.
But I did.
And I'm sure the library is the way to fame and fortune too, right?
Oh, absolutely. thank goodness for tier one of the New York State Pension Plan.
Yes.
But I did see the, and I didn't realize that there was a drawing of this until after I chose the drawings for the exhibition, but you provided a link to it. I did see the Private Lives in New York with Maggie Smith and John Standing.
Oh, right. Also drawn by Hirschfeld, but not included in the exhibition.
But you have a link to it.
Yes.
And so people can see it. And I remember enjoying it at the time, but I was very young. And I don't know that it was a big success, but they had these great actors in it. And of course, Private Lives lends itself to great, famous, and infamous artists wanting to do it.
It's sure.
Sometimes plays get done partly because they have these incredible roles.
Right.
And that continues. You know, I saw, the most recent one I saw in London was with Anna Chancellor and Robert Stevens, Toby Stevens, who was the son of Maggie Smith and Robert Stevens, and who is now in at Lincoln Center Theater in a play called Corruption.
Oh, right.
And that, so there have been some very good productions. A famous production, which I saw at the Theater on Film and Tape archive, I didn't see it live, was Howard Davies' production with Lindsay Duncan and Alan Rickman.
Oh, right.
Which was really a seminal production that was received rave reviews in London and New York.
After the Private Lives drawings, we have a drawing of Bee Lilly, actually several Bee Lillies, in different characters she played in a review that Noel wrote called Set to Music. And so tell us a little bit about that, because Bee Lilly was quite an unusual performer. I mean, in the sense that we don't have anybody like a Bee Lilly today, I don't think.
Right. Bee Lilly was Bee Lilly, and
right.
She had this incredible persona. As Noel said, she had star quality. He worked with her several times, and they had a sort of love-hate relationship.
Right. I found that out actually reading in the exhibition about, you know, their sort of on-again, off-again working relationship.
Right. And she says, Noel and I love to have screaming fights. I don't know if he loved that, but that was her. If you read her biography, she writes quite a lot about that. There is Set to Music, I believe, was the first time they worked together in New York.
Right.
And it is basically skits with a lot of Noel's music.
And this is 1939.
Yes. It had been done, a version of it had been done as Words and Music in London previously, but it was changed somewhat. And one of the songs introduced in it is, of course, I Went to a Marvelous Party, which Noel writes the details of how he was inspired to write it. He and Bee Lilly and Grace Moore had been invited to a party at Elsa Maxwell's, not realizing that they were meant to perform. And they were kind of annoyed about that. And in response and perhaps revenge, he wrote the song I Went to a Marvelous Party, and B introduced it, or at least sang it, in Set to Music.
Right. Now, you mentioned Elsa Maxwell, and she plays a role in this exhibition. We have a wonderful drawing of a party of Elsa Maxwell that includes not only Noel Coward, but Cole Porter, Jackie Kennedy, a couple of Duke and Duchesses. Who was Elsa Maxwell? And what was her relationship to Noel?
Elsa Maxwell was an American woman who was born in Iowa, in Keokuk, Iowa, who became, as she herself admitted, the greatest arbiter of taste and party giver in the world.
Wild.
And she met Noel Coward in I don't remember when they met, but it was early on. And he was not well known, and she invited him to Venice to chaperone Elsa and a friend. And they got to know each other better. And then they returned to New York. He went to her parties. He took her to the top of the Empire State Building, and she made a big PR event out of it, with much to his chagrin. And police came, and there were accusations of organized crime involved, but it was all a publicity stunt, which Noah right. did not know about.
Right.
But yet they continued to remain friends. And I think Al Hirschfeld drew Elsa several times.
Oh, sure.
Twice with Noel in the drawing. And she took the Duke and Duchess of Windsor, who were friends of hers, as everyone was a friend of hers, evidently.
Right.
To Present Laughter, when Noel was in it, actually, because he was in Present Laughter for a brief time late in the production. No, in the revival, which was done in conjunction with another of his plays as well.
Sure.
And they remained friends until her death, basically. But she was most famous as a columnist and party giver, though she actually was a songwriter as well, radio host. She was,
and we don't have anybody quite like her.
I remember when I was a kid, she'd appear on talk shows, and that's how I first heard of her.
Right, right. I mean, I sort of knew of her before I knew anything about her. You know, she was very successful in her publicity.
Yeah, she's even mentioned in one of the Irving Berlin songs from Call Me Madam, which is about Pearl Mesta.
Yeah, another, you wouldn't, if you made her up, nobody would believe you, but another woman who ended up becoming the ambassador to Luxembourg, sort of the last person you would expect, but she became the hostess with the mostest, according to Mr. Berlin.
And it's in that song that Elsa Maxwell is mentioned.
Yeah, of course, of course. Well, let's get back to the plays. And I think one of after Private Lives, we could argue about this, but one of his best known plays is Blithe Spirit. Tell us how he came to write that. I mean, that was a sort of gift to war-torn London.
Yeah, he was in London at that time, and you know, the war had begun.
Sure.
This is
1940?
40-41.
Right. I know it premiered in New York in 41, November 41.
I think it premiered in London earlier in 41,
okay.
In July, if I'm not mistaken.
Sure.
But his London flat was bombed.
Mm-hmm.
And he went out on the street and he could see whole streets of London in rubble. And
right.
I think it was at that time that he wrote London Pride, the song.
Sure.
But that song certainly was inspired by a Blitz. But he had to, you know, his country home, Goldenhurst, was appropriated by the army.
Wow.
which was what was done in those days.
Sure.
And so he went to the country with his friend Joyce Carey, who was one of the, he had a lot of friends who became sort of family. Joyce Carey was one. Gladys Calthrop, who designed many of his
right.
shows, was.
And Joyce Carey was a performer.
She was an actress.
Right.
I believe she later was the actress who serves the tea in Brief Encounter in the movie. But we'll have to check that.
That's Noel Coward's Brief Encounter.
Right, Noel Coward's Brief Encounter. But so they went to the country, and it was there in a few days he wrote Blithe Spirit.
Which is this, I mean, it's a wild story of a man whose first wife has died, who remarries, and a medium brings back his first wife, and eventually his second wife who dies, and she comes back too. It's I think a hilarious show that also makes you think. In New York, the original production, the husband was played by Clifton Webb.
Right.
And the medium was played by Mildred Natwick.
Right.
Well, and you included a drawing of Mildred Natwick looking in the mirror in her role in Blithe Spirit and looking back at her as her in costume when she was in Catherine Cornell's production of Canada?
Canada, yeah.
George Bernard Shaw's Canada, which she had been in for years, and they were doing special, what was it, like actor fund performances? Or
it was during the war. During the war. Wide Spirit was, although it existed well past the war, by the way, it became the longest running play until The Mousetrap.
Wow.
In London. But yes, Millie, although she was playing a full complement of performances of Light Spirit, mm-hmm. she also did several matinees of Candida with Catherine Cornell for the Army and Navy benefit, organizations right. benefiting the Army and Navy, because it was during the war. And even so, it showed, and some of the reviews said as much as they loved her earlier performances as Prossy in Candida, the fact that she was doing Madame Arcadi enhanced her Prossy that she was doing during the war. And it also gives a sense of her public spiritedness and willing to give back that led to her working as a volunteer at the library years and years later.
Yeah, that's wild. Well, I want to move on with some of the other people in the drawings. We talked about the Lunts before, Alfred and Lynn. And they were close friends with Noel Coward. And he wrote several shows, one to be in with them and another show for them. And the first show was Design for Living, which Hirschfeld did not draw the original production. He only drew the revival in the 1980s with Frank Langella, Jill Clayburgh, and Raul Julia. But tell us a little bit about that relationship with the three of them.
In 1921, when Noel made that first trip to New York, he met the Lunts. He had an introduction to Lynn Fontanne, who was British. Mm-hmm. And they had a wonderful time together. In this, they were staying in a boarding house on the Upper West Side. I'm not sure Noel was, but Lynn and Alfred were. They weren't married yet. Mm-hmm. And there was a great affection for each other. Noel may have been attracted to Alfred Lunt,
right.
and vice versa. And they agreed that, and Noel writes that they were eating delicatessen pickles and potato salad on the Upper West Side. And I wonder if that deli still exists.
Right.
I don't think so. I'm still looking for it.
Right.
And they talked about how when they would achieve greatness, Noel would write, when the three of them would achieve greatness, Noel would write a play for the three of them to appear in. And greatness came to the three of them. And Noel wrote that play when they were all available, and it was Design for Living. And Noel intentionally produced it in New York first. It was one of his plays that saw Broadway before the West End.
Right.
Because the Brits had this thing called the Lord Chamberlain, who was basically the official censor. Mm-hmm. And so Design for Living has been done many ways with many connotations and lots of innuendo, and it right. suits that. And it may have been intentional or may not, but it couldn't have opened that way, probably not in London when it premiered in New York.
Right.
And it was a big hit here.
Yeah, and it seems like a very advanced play for its time.
Yeah, definitely.
Dealing with issues of relationships.
Yes, and the thing about Noel is that, you know, some people have this image of him as all Park Avenue and Mayfair and the cigarette holder and the beautiful sure. dressing gowns. And there's a lot of, it's timely, the plays have been done and they're as timely today, many of them, as when they were written. Design for Living is certainly one. There's some of the plays in Tonight at 8:30.
Oh, sure.
Plays like Postmortem and Peace in Our Time are very timely today. And even Present Laughter. And they're given updated productions to some extent.
Right.
To suit the time. And Noel, according to Grant Payne, would have approved of that.
And of course, when they did Present Laughter here, what was it, in 1996 with Frank Langella and Steve Ross. The drawing shows the two of them. Of course, there's a bigger cast. They did something that was slightly controversial in that production, in which, well, you can tell us. You write about it in the exhibition about the performer who ends up naked on stage.
That's right.
And that hadn't been done before.
No, that character's name is Roland Maul, and he's, you know, Gary Essendine was the lead, whom Coward modeled after himself.
Right.
This is a larger-than-life character, initially played by Clifton Webb.
Right.
And played in London, I believe, by Noel himself.
Mm.
And he is totally a larger-than-life character. And the play is about his almost megalomania and excess. Gary Essendine.
Yes.
And this young playwright comes to see him, named Roland Maul, who is absolutely a madman and smitten with Gary. And you can see that. But in the production with Frank Langella and Steve Ross, when one of the scenes in which Roland Maul goes to see Gary, he takes off his coat and is stark naked.
Right.
And it is obviously that he's not just smitten with Gary because he's a great writer.
Right.
He's sexually attracted to him.
Right.
And this is after, I believe, Gary gives his great speech about if you want to write a play, what you have to do and how long it takes.
Right.
It's one of the great speeches of Noel's.
Right.
And good advice for anybody who wants to write a
play. Right.
And so that was controversial. And a lot of people said, Noel would not have wanted this. This is outrageous. And Graham Payne was interviewed and he said he absolutely would not have mind. He moved with the times.
Right.
And it a play partly about sexuality in terms of all the characters.
Yes.
And it works very well and it suits the play. And in fact, one of the recent great productions of Present Laughter took place at the Old Vic a few years ago with Andrew Scott, a brilliant Irish actor who played Gary and won, I believe, the Olivier Award for it. But in that production, one of the men in it has an overnight fling with Noel Coward. There was some gender swapping. The estate had no problem with that. The play was a huge success.
Mm.
And Noel's plays lend themselves to moving with the times and being meaningful,
right,
in today's world as well.
He was gay, but he didn't wear it on his sleeve. He knew that there was some old ladies in Worthington who maybe didn't know, and so he didn't want to sort of rub it in their face. But it's obvious, seeing the plays, reading the plays, it's very obvious that some of the characters are gay, or could be construed that way. And so I think he, again, a very contemporary playwright, writing well before his time. So another performer who shows up in this exhibition more than once in different roles, Tammy Grimes. And Noel Coward played a significant role in making her a star. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, Noel had written A Look After Lulu, which is based on a Feydeau farce.
Right.
And he needed to cast the main character. It's not a play that I have seen or even read. And I think he wanted Carol Channing for it.
We love her in the world of Hirschfeld, of course, as you know.
Right. Yes, I had the cookie with the picture on it at the 120th birthday party.
Yeah.
That is an iconic Hirschfeld.
Oh, of course. Of course.
But she turned down the role of Lulu because Lulu was a prostitute.
Right.
And Carol Channing had already played Lorelei Lee, who had some connotations. Still,
yes,
one of my favorite show recordings, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes.
Oh, yeah.
1949 or whatever it is. And so they had to find somebody to play that role. There are others who were stars who were considered, I believe, but they turned it down for whatever reason.
And Noel had seen Tammy Grimes in a nightclub performance?
Yes, I think it was Roddy McDowell. And another friend, Roddy McDowell was in Look After Lulu.
Right.
Said, you must go and see this woman who's doing this cabaret act. And she wasn't known. And Noel went to see her. And he said his famous words, she has star quality.
Right.
And he said, she's going to become a star. I don't know what the play will do.
Right.
But Tammy Garnes is going to become a star. And she did. And he worked with her again a couple of times. And she really owes a lot to him.
Sure.
Owed a lot to him.
Well, she appeared in another show, the musical adaptation that Noel wrote of Blythe Spirit.
Yes.
Called High Spirits.
Yes.
And that was on Broadway in 64, I believe.
Yes. That's right, early 64. And you know, when I was a kid, even before I got into working in the theater, my friends and I used to collect these record albums, all LPs in those days.
Sure.
And we had The Girl Who Came to Supper and High Spirits.
Wow.
And we just love that stuff. And
right.
That was an early, and the public school I went to put on shows. And the importance of the foundation now supports education. I'm digressing, but the public for work with young people and people of all ages, actually. And that work in New York City public schools in those days was so important to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly inspired me in terms of love of theater. But Tammy Grimes was in High Spirits. And I don't think she and Bee Lilly got along that well.
And I wanted to point out that Bee Lilly, I mean, these two very Noel Coward performers are in the same show. Bee Lilly played the Madame Arcadi character.
Yes. And Noel was directing it. He didn't write the book or songs or music.
Right.
Or lyrics, but he directed it. And he had his usual exasperations over working with Bee Lilly. And he said, but she's a star and she's going to be Beatrice Arcadi. Now, I know through my work, because I'm on the board at HB Studio, where Uta Hagen flourished for many years. And I know that Uta Hagen probably wouldn't have approved of Beatrice Arcadi because she believed in getting into the role. She said, if I see acting up there, I already don't like it.
Right, right.
But it was, so Noel was saying, and by the way, Uta Hagen premiered as a young actress of about 14 in Hay Fever at the University of Wisconsin.
No kidding.
Where her brother was in a college production of Hay Fever. And Uta said, I don't know what Mr. Coward would have felt, but here at the University of Wisconsin, I felt for the first time I could be an actress. And years later, she appeared on tour with the Lunts and the Siegel, and Coward came back to see her. And he gave her so many tips and complimented her, and she just adored him.
Wow.
But so neither Noel nor Uta Hagen would have approved of Bee as an actress. But right. As a star, she was really unique. And right. Noel recognized that. And right. said she's going to be Beatrice. She'll be great as Beatrice Arcadi. And Tammy Grimes was wonderful and has some good songs in the show.
Right.
And they got along.
And Tammy Grimes flew around the stage because she played.
Yes, she was on some sort of marionette type situation or on strings. And because she was the deceased wife.
Right, of ours. Yeah.
And she said, once I got the hang of it, you could sing, you know, you could sing your songs from up there. And it got a really good review in the New York Times and in other newspapers. High Spirits did.
Right.
But it was a very competitive year with Funny Girl, Hello Dolly, Fiddler opening later in the season.
Yeah. Fade Out, Fade In. We just did a whole podcast on 1964. And it's remarkable because some of Hirschfeld's most iconic works, you know, Carol Channing and Hello Dolly, Zero and Fiddler, Barbra Streisand and Funny Girl. I mean, these are still iconic productions that it's hard to believe that anything else happened on Broadway because they so eclipsed so much else of what was going on. So it's unfortunate that Noel Coward was a casualty of that.
Yeah. And that was the year I started going to the theater as a kid. Funny Girl was the second show I saw.
Wow, not bad. You got a good
career. I wish I could have seen High Spirits because we love the album.
Yeah.
The recording. And I still do.
Yeah.
And Tammy Grimes went on to do, she actually did an old Coward program at the library years later.
Oh, really?
After he was gone.
Sure.
But she was in Private Lives and she won the year that Noel and the Lunts were given special Tony Awards, which was 1970, 71, I believe. And Tammy Grimes won the Tony for Best Actress for playing Amanda in Private Lives on Broadway. So it's perfect for that to happen when they were all at the Tony Awards.
Yeah, that is great. Well, I mean, we talked about, you know, now we're getting late in the Noel Coward story. The last production, last New York production he saw, was that O Coward?
Yes. He, I guess that was after A Girl Who Came to, well, many years after A Girl Who Came to Supper.
Oh, sure.
O Coward started life as something called Noel Coward's Sweet Potato.
Hirschfeld drew the poster for its original production.
And it was put together by Roderick Cook, and it was basically a review with scenes. Mm-hmm. It got maybe one or two decent reviews, and the rest were not good at all.
Right.
And in fact, the scene from Private Lives featured Amanda and Elliot on roller skates.
Somebody will have to explain the reason to that.
I don't know. We could read about it further somewhere. But he rewrote it, and it became O Coward.
Right.
And in fact, it surfaced again in 1987 as O Coward, which is when Al Hirschfeld drew it, and it was a success then.
Right.
But before that Broadway production of it, O Coward was presented off-Broadway at, I think, a theater called the New Theater in the East 50s. Mm-hmm. And with Roderick Cook, and as a special event, there was a gala performance in January 1973 for Noel Coward and his friends. And Noel Coward came to New York for it with his date was his dear friend Marlene Dietrich.
As one does go, has a date with Marlene Dietrich.
Sure. Yes. And in fact, he originally envisioned a film of what became Sail Away as a film for himself and Marlene Dietrich. That didn't happen.
Sure.
But that event in that January of 1973, I believe,
right,
was the last time his last public appearance. Mm. All of his American friends were there, and they didn't know they were saying goodbye to him, but they said goodbye, basically said goodbye to him, because Jeffrey Johnson, who had become a friend as well as a one-time employee, and was there helping Noel, as he was kind of frail at the time. And after that performance, he went home to Jamaica, and a few months later, he was there with his three dear friends, Graham Payne, Cole Leslie, mm-hmm. who was his assistant. I said secretary in my caption, but he was actually his assistant. And Jeffrey Johnson. And one night he said to them, "Good night, my darlings." And he died the next morning. Mm. But that gala performance of O Coward was his last public appearance. And he loved it. That was he told them. So people saw at the time.
Well, I'm glad that story is in the exhibition, because it really gives us an understanding of sort of the arc of Coward's career. And while there were other shows, we have the last Noel Coward play that Hirschfeld drew was the Broadway premiere of a 60-year-old play called Waiting in the Wings.
Yes.
Which starred Lauren Bacall. And why did it take so long for that play to be done?
Well, I believe it premiered in London in 1960 with some great and famous actresses like Sybil Thorndike.
Right.
And it wasn't a big success. And so there was really not the the occasion or the impetus for it to come to Broadway, I suppose.
Sure.
It's about what is basically a home for older actresses.
Mm-hmm.
And Noel was incredibly charitable during his life. John Gielgud even said he was amazingly kind and charitable person, and generous person. And, you know, he gave support to, he was chairman of the children's home. The foundation continues to occasionally support Denville Hall, which is a residence for aging actors.
Mm.
And so Waiting in the Wings is basically an affectionate look at that sort of residence for retired actors and actresses. I believe the home in Waiting for the Wings is mostly for actresses. And Lauren Bacall and Rosemary Harris were the two rivals.
Right.
And I knew Dana Ivey was in it, whom I know.
Mm-hmm.
And
she appears in the exhibition in Present Laughter, the 1982 production.
Yes.
With George C. Scott.
And she was in Waiting in the Wings, as was Barney Hughes and Helen Stenborg, whom I've also worked with.
Sure.
And Rosemary Harris and Lauren Bacall.
And Rosemary Murphy was in it.
Rosemary Murphy, Betty Henritzer.
Elizabeth Wilson.
Elizabeth Wilson. And yeah. It was not a great success, but it was done the month of Noel's centennial in December 1999. John Simon, always a big Coward fan, gave it a rave review in New York Magazine. The other reviews were not so favorable.
And just so for younger audiences who may not know who John Simon was, he was a very tough theater critic, very acerbic. You know, he did suffer fools gladly. Right. So if he wrote a rave, that was unusual.
Yes. In fact, he was notorious for being nasty at times.
Yeah, exactly.
I worked with him on a few programs, and he was the sweetest, most erudite man.
Mm.
And just to digress a moment, when Barry Day wrote The Letters of Noel Coward, edited really, but he did write put a lot of biographical material about Noel into it. It was going to be reviewed for the New York Times. And I knew John Simon, and maybe I was working with him around the time that book came out. And John Simon said to me, and I don't think I was that, I was still working. I was not involved with the foundation yet.
Right.
I'd done a lot of Noel programs. And John Simon said, "This is such an incredible book. The Times gave it to me to review, and it's going to be the front page of the book review section on Sunday."
Wow.
So I immediately called Barry, and I said, "Barry, I have to tell you something, but it is so confidential."
Yes.
And I said, "Your book, if all goes as planned, is going to have a rave review on the cover of this coming Sunday's New York Times book review." And he was thrilled. I said, anything could happen. Maybe it won't be, but it was. And
right.
It really was great for Noel, great for Barry, and great for posterity to have that wonderful review from John Simon, who loved Noel's work, and up to the end, to that production of Waiting in the Wings.
Well, you know, you sort of done the same thing with the exhibition. It's great for Noel. It's great for Al, and it's great for everybody who comes and looks at it, because they can really learn a lot. I mean, I feel like I am a layman, Noel Coward fan. You know, I've seen a lot of the plays. I've read a number of them. I have copies of the lyrics of Noel Coward. I've used those. Love the music. But I learned a great deal on the exhibition, because you really delve into some things that I hadn't either thought about or didn't know about. And so I'm very appreciative of that. If you want to see the exhibition, we'll obviously have a link in our show notes, but there will also be, you can just go to the exhibition links on our website, alhirschfeldfoundation.org, and that will take you right to the sort of the entrance of the exhibition, and you go on from there. I want to thank you, Alan. This has been, as much as I learned in the exhibition, I've learned more talking to you. So I'm grateful for that. For those of you who are interested, you can check us out at alhirschfeldfoundation.org. You can follow us on social media, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. There, we've even got some great Noel Coward Men About Town exhibition merchandise you can get at the alhirschfeldfoundationshop.org. And if you're looking for items for your home, you can check out hirschfeldhomestyle.com. So we've got a little bit of, there's always a way for you to experience Hirschfeld. And I'm really appreciative to you, Alan, for bringing us the world of Noel Coward and allowing us to see Hirschfeld's take on it. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
I want to thank the Algonquin Hotel for hosting us here today, a place that Noel Coward knew and Al Hirschfeld knew quite well. And if you are thinking about coming to New York and need a place to stay, you should come to the Algonquin because they now have a Hirschfeld package, which not only gets you a wonderful room, it gets you a bottle of wine with the Hirschfeld label. There is other gifts that you get, Hirschfeld related and otherwise. And it's a great package. You can just go to Barriott.com or the Algonquin's website, or just Google Algonquin Hirschfeld package, and you will get a great opportunity to spend a night in a historic landmark, a great hotel, and celebrate Hirschfeld in a place where he spent a lot of time. So thank you very much, Alan, and we will speak to everybody when we do. Bye-bye.